So you're aware this was recorded on Thursday the 19th of March before Boris Johnson put the entire country under house arrest. However, most of the content should still be applicable and I don't think it changes too many things as we were already expecting this before it happened. Hello and welcome to the Right to Trump podcast. As truthful as resources permit, my name's Jimmy and I voted Leave in the EU referendum in 2016.
And my name is Jazza, and the real tragedy of these unprecedented times is not that I keep on hearing rumors on WhatsApp groups about the fact that Prince Philip has died and they're trying to bury it under coronavirus news, or the fact that apparently London is but minutes away from lockdown, quick run to Waitrose. But the saddest thing for me, and the greatest loss so far, apart from of course the loss of life, very serious, is the fact that the Eurovision Song Contest 2020 that was going to be taking place in Rotterdam is no longer going to be taking place. Regular listeners will know how much this event means to me, and I thank you for your thoughts and prayers in this very trying time.
So it could have been Rotterdam and anywhere, but in fact it will be nowhere.
Oh God.
That was pretty good, I think.
It was not. Don't you dare give yourself credit that you don't deserve.
It was a good cultural reference to, you know, a thoroughly uncultural event.
It is the epitome of European culture, and I won't have you say anything more negative about it. We meet regularly to talk about politics, current events, and social issues. What are we going to talk about this week, Jimmy?
Well, I thought we might start with this coronavirus thing. I think you might have heard of. It's originated...
Yeah, I mean, isn't it just kind of like a flu, and everybody's just freaking out, and nobody, and we need to calm down, guys, because loads of people die from the flu every year, and we're not, like, getting worried about that.
Yeah, well, as you were saying before we started recording this, these are unprecedented times, times without precedent. There has been no era or epoch in which the human race has seen a widespread disease covering the planet and taking people down along its way. It's never happened before.
In all seriousness, it is very serious. And we should listen to people who know their shit. Maybe not Boris Johnson, but maybe the medical professionals that turn up either side of him whenever he does his press conferences.
Is that the case, Jazza, or is it the case that if Boris Johnson says something, it must be untrue?
This is the conflict that I have been battling with for the past week.
It's been a tough one for Remainers because they obviously love experts in all their forms, but when an expert stands next to Boris Johnson, their hatred for him corrupts their brains and they're not sure whether to trust the experts.
No, what has been quite wonderful is, especially in today's briefing, he's just come off of the podium. It is Thursday the 19th today. He was particularly waffly and didn't really say anything of import whatsoever. One of the journalists, I believe it was one of the journalists from The Times, said, asked a question. Boris Johnson began to answer, and then she went, "Actually, I'd like to hear from the experts."
Oh.
Sick burn!
I mean, that's, you know, that is quite funny. I have to give that to it's also very douchey, but quite funny as well.
I thought it was fucking hilarious. I died. I loved.
He died, ironically, not of the coronavirus. So, speaking of people that might die soon, the US presidential election has now been narrowed down to...
Oh, no!
I mean, that won't be the last comment I make on this podcast about the age of the candidates. But the US US presidential election has now been narrowed down basically to Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders on the Democratic side, and probably Joe Biden even then, and then Donald Trump obviously on the Republican side. Jazza, it's been a couple of weeks since we have met and discussed any form of politics. How are you feeling about the presidential race and what it's looking like at this stage?
So what seems to have happened is that the Democratic voters of the United States have gone, "Oh no, I'm not sexist, but I think everybody else around me is. Therefore, we shouldn't put a woman forward as the Democratic nominee seems to have been the broad consensus, and one of the cited reasons why really high-flying, really capable women who were in the race, people like Elizabeth Warren and Kamala Harris, why they did particularly badly in this race, nobody having actually won a single state. It is interesting that I guess we chose to we're not involved in this, we're very English. This isn't our problem. That the two people who are in the final part of the Democratic nomination process as two old white men. It'll be interesting how this whole corona thing could affect stuff, and whether or not, as Jimmy said, I mean, they shake a lot of hands, innit?
I mean, as I was going to say at the top of this, all three of the people who could become president, although Bernie Sanders is now an outside chance, are you know, in one of the most vulnerable groups for the coronavirus.
I hear Cheetos are particularly susceptible to the virus, so poor Donald Trump.
I mean, he's generally a bit of a germaphobe, so I feel he's actually been preparing for an outbreak like this for quite some time.
Yeah, there's a rumour that he is pretending that he must have contracted it because he was in an aircraft with, I believe, a US legislator. Who was confirmed to have the virus afterwards, and then a few other people who were on the flight also got it. And then it was confirmed that Donald Trump was tested, and they said that it came back negative. Loads of people were poo-pooing this and saying that it was a lie, but frankly, I'm just... he is such a germaphobe that I'm like, if anybody avoided it on the flight, then it's definitely him.
I mean, also, the amount of junk food that man eats, I just think no virus is going to be able to survive in that kind of hostile environment. You need some nutrients.
Is it kind of like that clip in The Simpsons where Mr. Burns is actually being kept alive by the fact that there are so many germs trying to get access to his body that none of them can fit through the proverbial door?
I think it might be that sort of situation, and I appreciate the Simpsons reference.
You're very welcome.
There's no need to wait to segue to this last topic, Jazza, but it seems like an appropriate one for you to introduce. What's our third and final topic?
Dear listener, I am a gay man, and as such, part of my existence revolves around the waiting for, the build-up to, the excitement about, and the consumption of a certain television reality show franchise called RuPaul's Drag Race. The American season just entered its 12th mainline season a couple of weeks ago, and 13 new drag queens from across the United States, also Canada and France, whatever, if Australia can partake in Eurovision, we'll allow a French queen on RuPaul's Drag Race. But we have had a little bit of a drama in the queer community where one of the competitors in this year's competition has been accused by, I think it's over 9 individuals, of catfishing and soliciting kind of like inappropriate photos and content of them by pretending to give them the opportunity to be in a HBO show, and so has thus been labeled as a sexual predator. And it's awkward because they found this out just as they were about to air the season, so they are apparently hurriedly re-editing each of the episodes so that there is as little of this drag queen, her name is Sherry Pie, visible in the show as possible. But it's all a little bit awkward. Also, we might talk about kind of like, oh, is this a justifiable step? Are these not just allegations? Who knows? Woohoo!
I guess we will talk all about that.
I know that you're gripped by it. Anybody who has seen the video of Jimmy on my channel reacting to Drag Race will know that it really is one of his favourite pastimes.
It does stir my blood and excite me to my deepest core.
Excellent. Shall we listen to some music, then beg some of our listeners for a little bit of kish.
We can do that. If you like what we do at the Right Dishonourable podcast, you can support us by going to patreon.com/rightdishonourable. It's a pretty conventional Patreon account, and I'm fairly sure most of you know how that works. So if you're interested, head over there and do the business. We'd like to thank our existing patrons, Andrew Kilpatrick, Bent Hugary, David Warner, Gemma Cumming, John O. Matt, and Ollie McGregor. Thank you very much for your support.
Jimmy, at what point did you realise that coronavirus wasn't just going to be another kind of like run of a SARS or a bird flu that wouldn't hugely affect our day-to-day going arounds in the West?
Well, I was actually on holiday sort of just before things properly kicked off in the UK, and I saw some of the videos circulating online of Australian women fighting over toilet roll. I feel like toilet roll, you know, it's when people start squabbling over it, it's a very serious sign for any civilization. And then I came home and I actually found that the supermarket shelves were genuinely sort of bereft, not only of bog roll, but also cleaning goods and tins of pretty much anything. And before that, I'd been pretty blasé about it. And I suppose I still am slightly blasé about it. But, you know, hit a man in his stomach and that's when things really start to become apparent to him, I guess.
How has your life changed day to day since the virus struck?
I think I can see where this is going. I'm currently working from home over a very faulty mobile connection. Obviously...
You're doing so well, sweetie. So well.
The suffering is unbelievable from my point of view. But Jazza, how have you been coping? How has your life been affected?
So, hey, how are you? The day of, the day that the Prime Minister, said that if you had a dry cough, a dry persistent cough or a fever that you had to self-isolate, I woke up with a dry, persistent cough. I then had a bit of a panic because I live with somebody who is immunocompromised. I had already been told by then to work from home, as had a lot of other people by that point. I think it was like the day after we were sent home. And I was worried because I was in a flat with somebody who has who is immunocompromised, and so I locked myself in my room for 4 days. As per the government guidelines, I was there for 4 days until the fourth day, when we were told that if anybody has symptoms in a household, then everybody has to be in lockdown. And so have really ruined the next 2 weeks for the rest of my flatmates. I haven't left this flat for about a week. Tomorrow is actually the last day of my quarantine, so tomorrow I'm gonna like wake up nice and early and go for a fucking run in the woods. But yeah, I was slowly, those 4 days when I was only allowed to be in my room and go to the toilet and then wipe down the toilet with Dettol every time I went to the toilet because I had a fucking cough. You know what? It was an experience.
Do you think you've learned something about yourself, Jazza, through this experience?
I think I have, and I think what I've learned is that I almost definitely didn't have coronavirus, but I was following government guidelines like a good little Hufflepuff, and may have gone a little bit overkill, but I have actually, I don't know, I'm actually, as an extrovert, I'm surprisingly finding it very easy to deal with all of this. I have just reverted back to being 14-year-old me and basically doing the equivalent of talking to everybody on MSN all day long, which is all I did as a teenager anyway.
I'm sure that's the only respect in which you're behaving like a 14-year-old boy, cooped up in your room by yourself.
Oh my God, you are. I have never felt so disgusted, but yet so seen.
That's why people are buying so much bog roll, I think.
Oh my God. Not all of us are lucky enough to live with a partner, Jimmy. Some of us have to deal.
Okay.
What have you thought about... there's been a lot of criticism of the way that in the UK, especially the United Kingdom government has dealt with the crisis. There's been a lot of talk about suppressing the curve being essentially the critical mass of individuals who need intensive care. There are many models that show that if we allow coronavirus or COVID-19 to spread throughout the population unchecked, then need for intensive care will vastly outstrip the possibility, our capability to provide it. And so we're being told to do social distancing and to work from home wherever possible in order to flatten that curve and extend the period of time that we have to deal with it. But there have been a lot of criticisms when you compare the UK response to some of the responses that, say, France or Italy or Spain have done, where they've enforced a lot more deliberate social distancing. What's your take on kind of like how the UK government have dealt with it?
So I mean, somewhat in relation to your last comment about living with a partner, a friend of mine actually went on a date last night despite all of the warnings not to go out, and there have been lots and lots of reports of people still going to the pub and still generally living their lives, which, you know, but bearing in mind what you say about, you know, trying to space out the critical cases by, you know, social isolation and stopping people from going out and about, that does seem pretty silly. It does surprise me, all that said, the level of appetite there seemed to be among certainly some people in my Twitter feed, but I think more broadly for the government to take a more French-style approach and actually physically stop people from sort of leaving their house and sort of demanding to see paperwork and that sort of thing, demanding that people have valid reasons for leaving the house, such as going to work or going to get food or something like that, and refusing basically everything else. It's one of those weird things, is that people who generally describe themselves, I guess, as liberals or progressives, do seem to really dislike Johnson, even though he often seems to display, you know, kind of liberal principles, the liberal principle that actually the government wants to encourage you not to do certain things, but it's not willing to actually use police force to force you to do something.
I think that is a correct analysis of kind of like his philosophy, I think. But I think that there is so much alarm around this particular virus. A lot of people have done an awful lot of reading because they may be working from home and have a couple of tabs open. People are alarmed that there hasn't been a more coordinated and deliberate attempt to stop more people dying. Like, this is the thing. This is like people's lives that are at stake. And I feel like there is a willingness to kind of suspend that liberal or libertarian kind of like philosophy that is quite important, I think, in the British sensibility. It's been very interesting having him say that we need to beat coronavirus. Coronavirus isn't like it's not an enemy. It's not somebody that we're like arm wrestling. It's invisible. It's a virus. But I understand what he's doing by invoking that language, because it's like double down and do the war effort again. But even he, like even in today's press conference, he didn't seem to really believe the hype that he was talking about.
Well, a lot's always said about Johnson's speeches. For a guy who's actually sort of famed for his charisma, he's not necessarily the greatest at giving public speeches, I don't think. I mean, when you sort of talk about sort of his language and rhetoric and stuff, he does have that kind of Churchillian element that he likes to invoke. But I mean, also it's just common parlance to discuss fighting viruses and fighting disease. So I wouldn't necessarily read that much into that aspect of it.
No, but it's not just fighting. It was about beating it. I don't know. There was a couple of press releases that said the word beat about 7 times in 50 words, and I felt that was a bit, it was just, it stood out and it was strange to me. But anyway, please go on.
I mean, I've only had sort of cursory reading around the actual strategy, which, you know, may make you think that I'm not that well equipped to do a podcast about this, but doesn't usually stop us. And I think the thing is that there are trade-offs involved in dealing with any epidemic like this. And I think that this was also, you know, the risk of always bringing this back to Brexit. There seems to be a line of thinking in politics that there's only ever one answer to something. And actually, effectively, you just, when you have a problem, you hand it over to the experts and they deal with it. But there's a lot of politics involved in this. I mean, there's the political questions around, you know, how much economic harm are you willing to suffer while you're dealing with this problem, which is the other side of, you know, people are going to die. And actually, to be fair to Boris Johnson, he was very upfront about this, that in one of the initial press conferences he gave about the coronavirus. It's like anything else. I mean, we allow cars and to drive around, and there is a certain amount of death entailed in that, and by and large, people seem to accept that. They accept the convenience of people having personal transport in the means of a car. You know, even though they know, if everyone knows that the cost of that is that people get injured and killed in road accidents every day. So, you know, in many ways, there's no particular difference between that and dealing with the coronavirus and what measures you're willing to implement. It's just a question of scale and severity, I guess.
Yeah, and also I think there's a certain amount of, there's like the whole idea of the Conservative Party being this party of business. A lot of the economic measures have been very business favoured. They've offered, well, I can't remember the exact amount, but it's billions, hundreds of billions of, was it hundreds or was it 35 billion or 350 billion?
I think it was like
pounds.
330 billion pounds, I think, if we're talking about the same
thing. I was
figure.
Close.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was going to be offered out in some grants for smaller businesses and loans for some of the larger businesses. And there has yet to be, on Thursday the 19th, apparently there's going to be an announcement about this tomorrow, but there has yet to be any provisions to protect the wages and the standard of living of the workers that are inevitably going to be let go, because of trying times, and that have already been let go, and so won't necessarily have anything to be able to do, won't be able to benefit from any of the steps that the Chancellor takes tomorrow. It's all very well giving businesses a loan, but you have no control generally over how a business will end up spending that loan. The Prime Minister has said again and again that he hopes that they will spend it on retaining their staff. There's no obligation behind that at all. There's nothing stopping the owners of that business kind of taking the loan, doubling down, maybe investing in something else, but still letting their workers go. And what happens when also they've allowed for mortgage holidays for individuals who are struggling with mortgages? But people, let's be frank, people who have mortgages are not those who are necessarily living hand to mouth every month. They're not the ones that need the relief here. You need a freeze on rents.
Yeah, I probably would agree with that. And you know, I'm sure there are, you've kind of outlined some criticisms of the focus of Johnson's relief measures, and I think that's fair enough. But I guess there's, you know, there are still questions over long term and short term. You know, perhaps in the long term, protecting businesses actually makes more sense rather than letting lots of businesses collapse and then not really have anything at the end when, you know, when the pandemic is actually contained. I don't know. But at the end of the day, this is a very blasé view, but the Tories are the party of business, and political parties protect their own at the end of the day. You know, there's a certain amount of just you know, factional interests, I guess, involved in all of this. And I mean, all that said, I feel slightly more confident Boris Johnson dealing with this than I would Jeremy Corbyn dealing with this, which is not saying a great deal, but I think is saying something.
I mean, yeah, that's why we don't have a Labour government right now, Jimmy.
I mean, but it would be interesting, wouldn't it, if people were imagine a general election was happening say, just as this was kicking off, or you know, imagine there was some way you could ascertain who the public would prefer to have in charge if they knew this crisis was about to happen. Because you know,
yeah, but that is a shitty choice. That's like shoot my son or my daughter, to be completely honest. can we have neither? You know what though? Someone like Keir Starmer, in this kind of a crisis, if he does become the next Labour leader, he does feel like somebody who would be very good at setting a tone and suppressing panic, in this kind of in this kind of situation.
Well, he does exude kind of a stereotypical version of competence, I suppose you could say. Mm. He seems like a competent
guy. He's
got
nice hair. He's got nice hair and a lovely strong jaw.
He has no eyebrows, though. No one seems to have commented on this. Not that I think it's important, but, you know, Rebecca Long-Bailey sort of got criticised for her appearance, and she has quite weird eyebrows, I think. But Keir Starmer has no eyebrows. If you look at a photo of
maybe him. He saw the criticism of Rebecca Long-Bailey and just decided to opt out.
Yeah, maybe so. It's sometimes easier not to play the game than to get yourself dirty. I mean, it's interesting
does have eyebrows.
He does not have eyebrows.
I'm looking at them now.
They barely exist. They're wispy.
As somebody who also has like very fine eyebrows, I find that offensive.
You have serious eyebrows. He barely has any eyebrows.
He has really clear eyebrows. I mean, I can't see a single one. Maybe. No, he's. No, I'm sorry. His eyebrows are just very strong. Very good.
Okay. What do you think about, obviously, the Labour leadership election? There was kind of a sense that Starmer was going to win it even before coronavirus started to dominate the news agenda, but.
I mean, nobody really cares, do they?
Nobody cares anymore. And people have made the point, which I think is fair, that any sort of discussion about Brexit at this point is just way, way away from people. Do you think that they'll ask to extend the transition period, which is currently set till the end of this year?
I don't really care. I really don't care. I don't have a horse in this race really anymore. I don't think it should be something that's even crossing somebody's mind at the moment. If we are still having to deal with coronavirus now or towards the end of the year, of course it should be extended. What a stupid thing to suggest otherwise.
I think there will be some discussion about it, though.
Yeah, but what stupidity? What abject stupidity? I mean, as with the rest of Brexit. Hoo-ha. Hoo-ha. Surprise, that's my view.
Okay. There was something else I wanted to ask you about, but it's slightly slipping my mind. Is there any other aspect of this that you think is kind of interesting?
I think it is the fact that people really want there to be martial law.
Yeah, well, that was the point I was making earlier, is that there does seem to be an undercurrent of people that are just well up for a bit of, as you say, martial law. And the government is currently pushing through this coronavirus bill through the
and they basically are going to give themselves the right to enact martial law if they need to
do everything basically.
But I don't know. They've been so adamant that they aren't going to like hard close all of the social venues, and they've been so adamant that they aren't going to like really crack down, especially in London. They've been so vocal about it, it would be very unlike a politician to go against their word.
Very unlike Boris Johnson as well.
Imagine. All right, next.
I mean, speaking of people that, you know, pay scant attention to what it is that comes out of their mouth, do you think Donald Trump is likely to win against Joe Biden as seems
I actually,
the likely
I actually
candidate?
Thought you were... I actually thought that you were segueing into Joe Biden, but you went with Donald Trump. But it would have worked with either of them, I think. Neither of them are particularly great at speaking very much.
Joe Biden has a stutter, I think it should be pointed out. Hello?
Yeah, he does. He has a stutter, and he's also well known as kind of like having a bit of a loose mouth in certain situations. And there's certainly been times in his campaign to be the Democratic nominee where he has nobody's had really any idea what he's been trying to say. But he is now basically the presumptive nominee of the Democratic Party, 538 have him as 99% chance to be the nominee. Sanders is less than 1% chance, which is mad. I don't think it was ever... Oh, I mean, eventually it was that high for Hillary Clinton against Sanders, but Sanders is just well out of this race. I don't know how closely you were following the Democratic race, but do you think that... What was your kind of understanding of it? Oh, interestingly, Tulsi Gabbard has dropped out.
Okay.
No one cared.
When we originally came to record this episode, she was actually still in the race as the final woman in the race.
Yeah,
you pointed
no
out
more.
At the time. I mean, I guess you could argue that in some ways the Democratic primary voters are trying a similar-ish strategy to what they tried previously in the 2016 presidential election, in that they've gone for someone who, I mean, I know Hillary Clinton was a more divisive figure, but she was a moderate Democrat, as is Joe Biden. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Joe Biden's more closely affiliated to the Obama presidency as his former vice president. So there is that, and I have read some analysis that has fixated on his appeal to black voters in the US.
Just by association, which I find fascinating, but yeah.
Well, I mean, I think so much of politics and how, you know, not people who are not politically engage in politics is due to associations. It can be as thin as like, oh, you were Obama's right-hand man, or the vice president is not a very powerful position. But it has left us with this situation where you have two candidates, Joe Biden and Donald Trump, who are not in exactly peak physical condition. I don't want to exactly go on about their age, but it doesn't seem that appropriate to have people like that running to be, you know, the most powerful person in the world, and with all the burdens that implies on their time and health and all the rest of it. Is this really...
What would your solution to that be then?
So I probably wouldn't... I think it's odd, and I don't really think it's desirable, but I wouldn't necessarily do anything about it, because at the end of the day, this is what voters have chosen. I mean, you know, America mm-hmm. has a primary system, which is a more direct way of selecting a presidential candidate than, you know, what we have in the UK for selecting our party leaders. That's who they've gone for. There were plenty of younger candidates that they could have gone for, at least in the Democratic field. There were plenty of younger candidates
incredibly,
Trump was running as well.
Incredibly diverse. Lots of people of colour, lots of women. I think at one point there were over 25 individuals running to be the Democratic nominee.
Mm. You brought up the thing about Elizabeth Warren falling out of the race and her being female and that being a factor in why she lost. Do you think that's just the overriding factor, or do you think that's it's clustered there with other things?
She was another one of the... she was kind of... in terms of policy, she was very much aligned with Bernie Sanders. Was quite radical. She wanted to break up Silicon Valley firms, and there was a big Facebook, a well-known funded Facebook campaign against her campaign. She was competent. She was a big wonk. She was a big nerd, and that must have turned certain people off as well. But she was incredibly popular. She was full of energy.
Competence.
She was incredibly dynamic. Go on. Sorry.
I just think there's this Atlantic headline that I noticed. I think it was sometime last week. America punished Elizabeth Warren for her competence, and the basic theory behind the piece is that people are threatened by a woman who seems competent and wonky. I do think there's something in that, but I don't think she necessarily exuded competence so much as exuded, I don't know, wonkishness, which is not the same thing. She was very famously sort of very active in kind of attacking the financial sector after the crash. She's a former professor of Harvard, I think I'm right in saying. So I'm not questioning her on her grounds, but Is she competent in the sense that she's actually run something successfully? Sort of, you know, has she actually, say, run a city or governed a state or anything like that?
No, not in terms of having had that running a particular level of the American Federation.
Mm.
But there's lots of people who haven't had that experience and have been. And have been presidents. Obama was a senator, but was a caseworker before then, right?
I don't think she needs to have had
the experience of actually doing that without the competent angle for Warren came from the fact that she had literally a plan for everything, a costed plan for everything, and she actually. Sometimes became unpopular because she told people that if we had universal healthcare in the US, your taxes might have to go up. Mm. And it was like, oh, well, that was actually quite refreshing. She was competent because she had done the work and had done the maths and had thought through everything. Whereas Bernie Sanders never had to do any of that stuff. He never had to cost anything. He never had to give really detailed plans of what he was going to do. Bernie Sanders was about kind of like how he made people feel, whereas Elizabeth Warren made you think.
I mean, I think that's probably overstating it, that last statement, though I agree with your comparison.
Yeah, but I liked her so much.
Exactly, you felt good about her. She was very popular among a certain, you know, more wonkishly inclined, you know, person. Like, that's why she was very popular with a certain type of American journalist. Because she made them feel good things. Like, she, I mean, in many ways, she sort of flattered the conception of that, you know, some well-educated, to use that phrase, people have about themselves, that, you know, you should be credentialed and have certificates. And that's not to take away all the stuff that you said about her actually having thought things through, and comparing that to Bernie Sanders and him, it, you know, as you say, kind of winging it a little bit more. I think that's a fair point. But having planned for things is quite different. You know, having a skill in foreplanning is quite different in knowing how to run something, because knowing mm-hmm. how to run something involves having to make compromises with your plans. And so, you know, in some cases, it involves not really having a plan at all and just making it up on
isn't
the hoof.
Isn't Bernie Sanders known as one of the least consequential senators in history? He's very rarely kind of actually brought stuff to the Senate floor. Very rarely would actually create legislation or draft legislation. A lot of that is because he was never actually, until recently, he wasn't actually a registered Democrat. He was an independent senator from Vermont. And so I'm not sure. Like, I'm not sure that kind of like critique of Warren as somebody who hasn't run stuff really holds water when you consider the type of people who run for office in the United States and the people who end up getting office.
Well, it holds water in the sense it applies to a lot of people outside of Warren as well as Warren. You know, I suppose, you know, as a general point, it would be more encouraging to see more candidates who'd mm-hmm. run lower level things before they try and run an entire country.
It would be nice, wouldn't it? But it is not the they turned the presidential nomination process and the presidential election into a reality TV program, and then a reality TV star won it. So
very astute.
Thank you. I've definitely stolen that from someone, but I have no idea who.
So do you think, all that said, how good do you rate Joe Biden's chances against Donald Trump?
I don't know. With coronavirus and COVID, the coronavirus COVID-19, who the hell knows what could happen? I was skeptical that Biden would be able to go up again. Biden, who is not very good on the stump, has occasionally been very bad at public speaking, doesn't really overly excite people. People have settled for Biden because they think, and they've been told, that he is the best bet to beat Donald Trump, not because he particularly is an incredibly exciting candidate. And it's been despite a lot of his characteristics that he's become the favourite rather than because of them. Whereas Trump still excites a lot of people. It's still, they're having kind of like an informal, well, no, it's still formal. There's still a kind of like a primary process for the Republicans. And what is not interesting is how many people are voting for Donald Trump. Because it isn't, he's basically running unopposed everywhere. But what is interesting is the number of people that are turning out to vote for him, and it's something like three or four times the number that Barack Obama had in his uncontested primaries in the run up to his second run for president in 2012. And so he still has a hugely animated base. And now he's not just a guy with a Twitter account. He is an established political figure with a proper mechanisms around him to be able to run not just his campaign that he had, where he basically called all of the TV stations and tweeted about everything and had his name recognition. But he also has all of the traditional Republican Party infrastructure around him as well, and that would have originally been a really hard thing to beat. But now with coronavirus, I don't really know. Like, Americans seem to be pretty split in opinion of how well Trump is doing with it along party lines, obviously, surprise surprise. But it is, man, I don't know. If America, if lots of people die in America, that's going to be, and the economy does really badly. The economy was one of the things that was doing really well for Donald Trump. Then it could be really bad for him. We could have a President Biden. That is if Biden doesn't die.
Yeah, that's all true. And American presidents do die quite regularly, as it goes. Certainly compared
it's
to
one
British
of the
promises.
Most dangerous. Yeah, it's one of the most dangerous jobs you can have in the world.
Yeah, statistically speaking, definitely. Sort of linking back to our first topic, what do you make about this whole row that kind of emerged today about Trump referring to the coronavirus as the Chinese virus?
I mean, it's silly and racist, isn't it?
Is it racist? In what sense is it racist?
Because so there's a reason that we don't. I believe there was SARS, which was severe acute respiratory syndrome. Then there was MERS, which was Middle Eastern respiratory syndrome, and which are both other coronaviruses. And they now say that they don't give geographical kind of monikers to viruses, because then they can be steeped in prejudice and racism against the people from those countries. And the people who name them, like when they named COVID-19, it was something that was said that we decided, like, it was a deliberate to not call it like the Chinese something or the Wuhan something
virus,
something.
Yeah. But I mean, is MERS racist then? Because it does name a geography.
Yeah. Well, like, it's not racist in itself, but it can be used in a racist way. And I think that Donald Trump is using it in a racist way, not least because he is a racist.
Right. Okay. But it's not inherently racist to call it the Chinese virus or the Wuhan virus, as the case may be.
Well, there's a reason that it isn't called that anymore, and that's because it becomes a very easy tool to use against people from those backgrounds.
Is that true, really? I mean, is this not just politically correct people overreacting?
No, I have a flatmate from South Korea who has had some nasty things said to her on public transport, and I have a friend from who's half Kyrgyzstani, who looks East Asian, won't have people before we went into kind of like work from home status and it got more serious, had people be quite rude to her as well.
But that was despite the fact that people have generally referred to this as the coronavirus in the UK.
Yeah, but so because it's seen as a virus from China.
Yeah, but that's irrespective of what it's called. If you're not, you know.
But then calling it the Chinese virus is only going to make that worse.
I don't think that's obviously the case. I think people know that it's from China. I think it's very well understood that that's the case, whatever you call it, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I think it makes it worse. It's also wrong.
It's not wrong, is it? I mean, it is an accurate description as much as what it is.
A virus doesn't have a nationality. It doesn't matter that it's a virus that started in a wet market in Wuhan. It's irrelevant information.
I don't think anyone's suggesting it has a nationality as such when they call it the Chinese virus. Or the Wuhan virus, as the case may be. We just have names.
What is your reaction to it?
Well, as I said, the name that has gained currency in the UK, which is generally what I think should be, you know, things should be called, it's the most common term for it, is coronavirus. It's not the, which, mm-hmm. you know, is also inaccurate in the sense there are multiple coronaviruses. Mm-hmm. I know COVID-19 is the more specific term, but, you know, it's, people generally call it the coronavirus. So that, as far as I'm concerned, is what it is, you know, for the purposes of public consumption.
Mm-hmm. So why do you think Donald Trump would perhaps want people to start thinking about it as the Chinese virus?
Because it winds up a load of fuckwits who he likes winding up. He's made an entire career out of it.
No. He's not doing it just to troll. He's doing it because then it's a powerful weapon, because people who listen to him are then going to make the link between China and this virus. And it's then going to be easier for him to be able to have a strong stance against China in the future, because it's going to be tied in association to the way that it is referred to China as a nation.
I'm not sure Trump is that strategic a thinker, to be honest with you.
I think that you are underestimating one of the greatest political minds of our generation.
Maybe so.
I don't even think I'm being sarcastic.
But he's sort of, if what you're saying is correct, he is kind of correct in assigning blame to at least Beijing, as at least the Chinese government, in the way they've handled this and the way that it's spread as a result of their actions, no?
Yeah, we're learning now, though, how much better China has gotten at dealing with these kind of events, though. Like, Italy just today surpassed China as having the most number of deaths, which, when you consider Italy, I think, is a country of, I think, 60 to 70 million people, and China is a nation of a billion. Like, that is insane that Italy has surpassed it. And
is that taking the figures that the Chinese government has released as correct, or is that assuming they're much larger than what the Chinese government
No, that's assuming that the numbers are correct, but I don't think that there is any evidence anymore that China is trying to suppress it. Like, the WHO seem to have not criticized them for a while. I believe at the very beginning there was a desire, there was criticism from the WHO that China was not being transparent enough, but that dropped away pretty quickly when it became clear that it was very serious.
So do you think that China, you know, if we follow your argument, do you think China's more effective at dealing with the coronavirus than Italy because it has more experience in dealing with these kind of things?
There's probably that, but also they don't have to ask anybody's permission in order to go into military lockdown. Like, it's a single party communist state. They can do what they want. Similar reasons why they're able to build infrastructure much faster than us, because they don't have to worry about the legal issues.
Mm. That is true. Roll on mm-hmm. the Johnson autocracy.
Oh my god, I cannot wait. My body is ready.
Should we talk about RuPaul's Drag Race for a little bit?
Yes.
If your body is ready.
My body is prêt-à-manger. So there is this drag queen in the United States who was reasonably big stuff in New York City, called Sherry Pie, who got onto whose real name is Joey Guglielmi, or Guglielmin.
Joey, let's say.
Joey. Yeah, exactly. Sherry got onto RuPaul's Drag Race season 12, and apparently has gotten quite far in the competition, maybe even to the final.
Oh.
Where there would be four drag queens competing head to head for the crown, to be America's next drag superstar. Sherry, after they finished filming and have cut everything together and were doing all the promotions, was then accused by multiple people, as I said in the intro, I believe it's 9 or more than 9 now, individuals, young actors who were trying to get their big breaks. So Joey Guglielmelli, which I think is how you actually pronounce it, used to pose as a casting agent and encouraged these young actors to pose nude for her, to masturbate in front of her, and for her to film it, and encouraged
her. This was all over the internet, wasn't it? It wasn't in person.
Some of it was in person. Oh, so right. Okay. he would pose as this casting agent and say, "Oh, I'm going to send my boy Joey around. He knows what he's pretty fresh, but he knows what I want. But hey." I don't know why. That's just the voice I've now given
Alison.
Sounds
like Estelle from Friends.
Yeah, sure, exactly.
That's what all agents sound like, though, isn't it?
100%, exactly. This was, so I think this was quite rightly seen as sexual abuse and sexual manipulation, emotional abuse, as such. And then Sherry Pye basically admitted it all, said, "Sorry, yeah, I did it. I'm learning to love myself. I learned to love myself on the show, and I'm still learning to love myself now." Fuck off. has subsequently, at the beginning of each episode of RuPaul's Drag Race now, they have a disclaimer that is there, front and centre, that says Sherry Pye has been disqualified from RuPaul's Drag Race and will not be partaking in the finale, which is meant to happen in the spring. They're basically recutting all of the episodes every week to reduce the amount that you are able to see her as much as possible.
It's funny you say that, because but just before we recorded this, my girlfriend actually watched an episode of season 12 with Sherry Pye in it, and Sherry Pye seemed to be getting a fair bit of screen time, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't noticeable that she'd been excluded from the TV show. I don't think you'd have got that mm-hmm. impression just watching it anyway.
Do you know which episode?
One or two, I think. One of the early ones, mm-hmm. anyway.
So the first one that she's in, I think it's episode 2, that was, the allegations were announced days before that aired. And so they had less of a chance to be able to actually cut her out. And the next one, episode 3, there is a significant drop. She's still in it quite a lot, but because she wins the episode. This is the awkward thing. They're trying to navigate the fact that somebody in a reality TV show who actually did really well is now going to have to be kind of like suppressed and like made to not matter as much, when actually they matter quite a lot to the narrative arc of the whole season. There were lots of people saying that she apparently got through to the final. But what has been interesting is the queer community's response to this of it was just kind of like sudden, and a lot of people just decided to all of the people who do commentary on RuPaul's Drag Race and stuff have literally just cut her out of any of even mentioning her in any reviews, and it's been incredibly extreme. And I wanted to talk about this especially in response to in the context of Caroline Flack, the TV presenter, who, after receiving an awful lot of hate online, after she hit her boyfriend or something.
She's alleged to have assaulted her partner. I'm not sure mm-hmm. actually what went on, but yeah, assault was the charge.
And then she committed suicide because of the way that people talked about her online. And I'm very conscious of that as this series goes forward, because a lot of people have been very vocal about this drag queen.
I think
queer people aren't great with mental health anyway.
With Caroline Flack, it's sort of advised not to attribute suicide to any one cause in particular, although there are obviously mm-hmm. Triggers for it, as it were. I don't think that even though people can end up doing things like that in response to criticism, I don't think that really stops criticism being valid for, you know, valid for bad behavior, really. You know, I think people should be proportionate for how they criticize public figures, but you know, that is sort of part of the deal. If you decide you want to lead a public life, then you know behave badly, you are going to be criticized. And you know, you never know how much with these things that actually, you know, somebody not, you know, isn't just like sort of feeling bad because they're being criticized. They're also feeling bad, probably often, because they've done a bad thing and they feel bad about it. So, I mean, I don't suppose you feel any obligation to temper your criticism of Sherry Pie just because, you know, that is a risk.
No. I just wish that we were able to create environments where we could just turn our back on her, and she weren't some, like, if it were viable for them to cancel the whole season, I think that would probably be the best thing. But then there are 12 other drag queens who have worked incredibly hard for their art and have deserve the exposure. This is such a huge show. This is the only show where a drag queen can kind of like get her big break. It is scary how much of a monopoly it has on kind of like queer culture at the moment. And so to take that opportunity away from the other queens who are in the show would be terrible. And so I understand that this is kind of like a happy medium. What was interesting was that in the third episode, spoiler alert if you care, she wins the main challenge and then gets a $5,000 kind of like tip. And I believe at the beginning or at the end of the episode, the producers of the show say that they have given $5,000 to charity. They don't say that they have taken it away from her, so it would be interesting to know if Sherry Pie is actually still getting the financial benefits from this show, which I'm sure would infuriate some people.
I mean, I'm sure there's something in the T's and C's of whatever it is they sign when they enter these shows that says that they can withdraw prize money for, you know, misconduct or other reasons like that.
Misconduct, by the way, great drag name.
That is true. I'm sure somebody's already taken it somewhere. You kind of referenced in your early spiel this point that Joey admitted to what he'd done, and then sort of kind of explained it away by referencing mental health problems and that sort of thing, which. I mean, we've sort of saw a similar thing when Kevin Spacey, the actor, was accused of
things.
And he sort of, I guess, referenced being closeted would be a fair way to describe his statement.
I'm going to be less kind to you because it's my community and I'll do what I want. He basically went, yeah, I abused some people because I was a closeted gay man. By the way, I'm a gay man. Can that be the story now? Okay, bye. Yeah. Not to belittle his experience or anything, you know?
And then he was also, I mean, there are quite a lot of parallels here, but he'd recently shot a film. I can't remember what the sort of storyline was that this rich guy's grandson had been kidnapped and he was deciding whether to pay out the ransom. And they literally reshot all of his scenes and totally cut him out of the film. And they'd already released the trailer for this, so it's probably still on YouTube. You can go and see it. So, I mean, I guess that was an option for them, but
You can't completely go back and reshoot a reality TV show, though.
No, you can't. No. But
it's not scripted, right? But yeah,
the mental health thing, and you know, people often Harvey Weinstein, who obviously has just been sent to prison. I think
probably for the rest of his life, right? For 20-something years.
Yeah. I'm sure after the allegations initially came out, or maybe it was him or Kevin Spacey, said that like they were going into rehab to deal with their problems, and there does seem to be a pretty unhealthy conflation of just being, you know, being a bad person with having mental health problems. I think, and that I don't think it's great that people can abdicate any sort of moral responsibility by just saying, oh yeah, I have, you know, I'm depressed or anxious or whatever, and therefore you should, you know, trying to make people feel sorry for them, or, you know, using it to exculpate themselves in some way.
Yeah, but I think that that's something that Hollywood as storytellers have done for such a long time. Like, I am mentally damaged, therefore I do evil things. Like, it's a common trope that they use, so it doesn't surprise me. And it was also basically how you got away with stuff back in the day. You said that you were going into rehab and you were very sorry. And you could get away with appalling behavior based on that, but with that as a response. But I think the Harvey Weinstein Me Too stuff really did have huge consequences for the way that you're able to kind of like deal with this kind of thing. I think that there was a period maybe also when the Sherry Pie stuff, maybe the production company wouldn't have stood by the survivors of the stuff that Sherry did, or that Joey did. And they would have dismissed them as allegations. And there are certainly some people in the community who were saying, well, these are just allegations. But actually, she did admit what she did. But yeah, I think it's very much a sign of the times, both for kind of like this public dragging of individuals and the consequences of that, but also this lack of acceptance and tolerance of kind of like people who abuse power and people who manipulate others anymore. I think that that is probably a good thing.
I mean, I don't see how it could be a bad thing, to be honest with you.
You're welcome, but I was trying to say something profound, Jimmy, and you've just ruined it by pissing all over my little parade. Anyway, watch season 12 of RuPaul's Drag Race. It's very good.
I mean, I have just sort of seen in the background an episode, and I stand by all my initial judgments in that video you referenced earlier.
But your taste level is low.
Is that just a fancy way of saying I have bad taste?
Yes.
Okay. I can live with that, just so you know, so long as you learn how to speak directly in the future.
Excellent. You have shit taste, Jimmy. Shall we wrap up and go away back to our solitary confinement?
Unless you have something more you want to say about RuPaul's Drag Race, which I'm sure you don't.
Oh my god, I mean so much. No, so many. I love Heidi in Closet. I don't think that her name is as bad as RuPaul insists that it is. I think that Gigi Good is probably being groomed for the win, but I wouldn't mind a Widow Von Du up there. I think she's brilliant in the confessionals. Britta can suck it and has scarily big teeth.
Okay, on that note, I think we can call an end to this. If you want to contact us, you can contact Jazza John on all the social media networks, I think.
Probably, yes, social media consistency. And you can find Jimmy only on Twitter at JDE Nichols.
You could also find me on LinkedIn, but please don't. That would be embarrassing for both of us, I think.
All right, bye then.
Bye-bye.